Safety Corner with Florian Wagner.
Welcome to Safety Corner. This is the first English episode and I'm happy to have Anthony Corso as my guest in this episode. He is a PhD student at the Aeronautics and Astronautics Department at Stanford University, where he is advised by Professor Michael Kochendorfer in the Stanford Intelligent Systems Lab. He does his research in safety critical autonomous systems, and he is also dealing with safety of the systems, and therefore he is my guest today, and we will talk about how to achieve safety in highly autonomous systems and highly automated systems, also in context with how to assure safety when we have intelligent systems, artificial intelligence in our systems. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, Florian. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
I hope I described your research exactly. Can you describe your research and your work in some short words?
Yeah, so in our lab, the Stanford Intelligent Systems Lab, one of the areas of research is the safety of safety-critical autonomous systems. So one of the obvious applications for this is autonomous driving. But we also look at things like autonomous flying and aircraft collision avoidance systems, anything where you have some sort of intelligence decision-making system who's operating in an environment that's safety critical, and you know, the failure of that system could mean loss of property or loss of life. So the approaches that we look at typically involve actually using machine learning to try to discover the flaws in these autonomous systems. So we're basically looking for scenarios in which the autonomous system behaves incorrectly or has some sort of failure that we wouldn't expect.
And how do you find those flaws? Which approach do you apply?
Yeah, great question. So typically, we have some sort of simulator of these systems. So you can think about in an autonomous driving scenario, we'll have the ego vehicle. Is this what you call it, the ego vehicle?
Yes.
Are you familiar with that term? Okay, great. So we have the ego vehicle that we're trying to potentially find failures from, and it is going to be operating in some environment that could involve other agents on the road or other pedestrians. And so the approach that we take is we hand over control of those other agents that we refer to as adversaries. We hand over control of those adversaries to a reinforcement learning algorithm. So this is a machine learning algorithm that learns how to take actions with these agents. And the goal of that reinforcement learning algorithm is actually to induce a failure of the system under test. So it will manipulate the adversaries to maybe perhaps drive erratically or drive toward the ego vehicle in order to try to find failures. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. I read your IEEE paper from last year.
Oh, fantastic.
And you described some difficulties in applying adaptive stress testing.
Yeah.
Because I think you said that the algorithm tends to find similar failures. Can you describe what was the problem and how did you solve it?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two problems that frequently come up when doing these types of automated testing. The first one, as you mentioned, is the algorithm will find a failure example. So it will find a situation where the ego vehicle does something improper, and then it will learn that it can repeatedly perform those same actions and basically rediscover the same failure over and over. And this occurs especially if the failures are rare. So perhaps it hasn't seen a failure for many, many, many different simulations, and then it finds a failure, and then it's going to exploit that failure over and over. So the way we dealt with that first problem was to provide an extra incentive to the algorithm to find failures that are different from the ones that it found. So basically, if we find a failure, we store it in memory. And then on future iterations of the reinforcement learner, if we find a failure and it's too similar to the failure we've already found, we no longer count that as a failure. And so the algorithm is forced to begin its exploration again to try to find more different versions or different failures. And then the other problem that we came across was that many times the type of failure that we found wasn't particularly realistic. So there's kind of a silly example that we show in the paper where we have this scenario where a vehicle approaches a crosswalk and the pedestrian is trying to cross. And so the vehicle comes to a complete and safe stop before the crosswalk. And then the pedestrian basically turns and runs headlong into the stopped vehicle. And so according to our simulation, this is considered a failure because a failure was defined as any collision between the vehicle and another agent on the road. But of course, anyone looking at that can immediately say, like, that's not the fault of the autonomous vehicle at all. And we don't actually care about trying to solve that particular failure mode. So the solution to this was to incorporate some common sense driving rules. So are you familiar with Intel Mobileye's responsibility sensitive safety?
No.
Okay, so this is a set of rules that was defined by this group at Intel where they took like five common sense driving rules, such as do not rear end somebody or right of way is given, not taken. So these common sense rules that we all learn when we're learning to drive, and they formalize them into mathematical rules about which actions you're allowed to take and not take on the road. And their claim, and this has been a bit debated in the community, but their claim is that if everyone on the road followed their set of driving rules, then we'd live in a world where there were no collisions. And so what that means is that any vehicle who violates one of those rules could, and then gets into a collision, can be said to be at blame for that collision. So again, this is kind of a debated topic among people who are thinking about applying this to actual autonomous vehicles. But we thought, well, we could take these rules and encode them in our simulator and therefore allow our simulator to only find failures where the vehicle was actually at fault for the failure, in that it violated one of these responsibility-sensitive safety rules. So then as soon as we did that, the reinforcement learning algorithm only learned to find failures in which the system under test behaved improperly. So we started finding failures where now the vehicle has some perception errors and it doesn't quite see the pedestrian, and the pedestrian walks into the road at just the right time and there's a collision. And so these it creates failure modes that are significantly more realistic.
That means that you repeat those calculations, I don't know how many times, but you repeat it. How can you say that, is there any metric to say, okay, now we found X percent of all possible failures?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the biggest challenges of these approaches is that because the space of possibilities where a failure could occur is so large, and oftentimes failures themselves are relatively rare, it can be really challenging to say anything concrete about whether or not you've discovered all of the failure possibilities. So one technique that we look at is just a probabilistic technique. So if you take, if you run some number of simulations, you can get an idea of, as to say you've run some number of simulations and you have not found a failure. Well, then that can give you a sense of an upper bound of the likelihood that a failure exists, but you haven't found it yet. So we've been looking at some approaches to try to measure what that upper bound might be. But if we're looking at probabilities of failure that are incredibly low, so some people, you know, say that before we can have autonomous vehicles on the road, that a failure needs to be about 1 in a billion per hour. This is a number that can be really hard to validate using just probabilistic techniques.
Well, that's the most challenging question in future, but it also have been, because how can you validate such a number?
Yeah.
In your other paper, a survey of algorithms for black box safety validation.
Yeah.
You also mention slightly that AI and safety are not typically partners, let's say, because we don't know how the system is rearranged after it learns something to say it like this.
Yeah.
And how can we assure that those new techniques are as good as our old techniques? You also mentioned that we could use formal methods, but they are impractical because there are so many scenarios the autonomous car drives that we cannot apply formal methods. But those methods are established.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think it will be easy to leave those established methods behind and go towards those artificial intelligence based techniques?
So I definitely don't think we should be leaving those techniques behind. I think that the ultimate solution to this problem of safety validation is going to involve a whole range of techniques, and it's going to cross, you know, every aspect of the design cycle. So we're going to need, you know, a set of rules, like I described earlier, that describe what types of actions are allowed. And then when we actually design the system, the design of the system needs to be such that each component is independently validated. And so the techniques that I'm talking about, where we sort of stress test the entire system as a black box, I think are going to be most valid near the end of the design cycle. So it'll be in a position where we have a system that we're reasonably confident is safe, and then it will undergo sort of this barrage of artificially intelligent stress testing to try to discover weaknesses in it. And this can be done by the companies who are designing the vehicle itself, but I also imagine that there'll be third party or government agencies that are going to want to perform these types of safety validations kind of independently. Another point, you mentioned formal methods. There's another couple people in my lab who are currently working on formal verification of neural network-based controllers. So if you have, say, a neural network on board that's interpreting the camera input and making decisions about how to drive, we are starting to develop techniques that can begin to actually formally verify the behavior over that control system. But of course, you have to generally make some pretty strong assumptions about what kinds of disturbances you're likely to encounter. And it also doesn't really scale to like the large neural networks that a lot of folks are trying to use. But it's definitely a step in that direction of bringing these tried and true, kind of what I call the gold standard of safety verification, which is these formal approaches, into the world of machine learning.
You mentioned disturbances. In your IEEE paper, you also modeled sensor noise.
Yeah.
Which kind of noise did you consider?
Yeah, so in that paper, we kept it relatively simple in that we just gave additive white Gaussian noise to the position and velocity of the other agents on the road. So we didn't assume any sort of vision-based perception system. Instead, we assumed that the vehicle could localize other agents on the road, but then there was some Gaussian noise to the actual perception. And then we figured out, you know, which sequence of noise inputs would be required for the system to fail.
That mean you all modeled random failures and not, as we call it here, systematic failures, where let's say a rock hits a sensor, therefore the sensor fails, right?
Yeah. Yes, that is correct. Although it's still absolutely possible to use a technique like this to model something like that. You just need a probability distribution over the likelihood of such events. So one of the disturbances in the environment could be the outright failure of one of your sensors. And so then you could then run your simulations, and one of the possible things that happens is that the sensor goes out, and then that could induce some sort of failure. The other thing you could do is, you know, if you want to test how likely the system is to fail if one of the sensors is gone, then you remove that sensor entirely from your model and then let it be subject to random environmental disturbances, and then you can see what are the likely failure modes when that sensor has disappeared.
You said that your technique should be applied in a very late project phase when testing the software. But could you imagine to use this approach also to find scenarios in which the ego vehicle has to behave correctly? And I mean, at the very beginning, when designing the sensor system, when designing the sensor systems and all those system decisions before really designing the software and the hardware of the autonomous system. Could you imagine to use this technique in this phase?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting idea. So the idea, just to make sure I understand, would be to generate a bunch of challenging scenarios in order to get a handle on what the specifications would need to be for the performance of the system. So whether that be the sensors or the planning module. I think that would be great. In order to actually run this adaptive stress testing, you need, you know, a simulator with a vehicle that is performing something like an autonomous vehicle. So, you know, perhaps you would take an older version of your system, run it through, find its failure modes, and then use that to inform the next iteration. But you'd need to start somewhere. You'd have to have some sort of autonomous driving model to begin with.
Yeah. Just like take your system and you apply the RSS, the responsibility sensitive safety policy. Mm-hmm. And now we need requirements for the sensors, range, and the opening angle. Uh-huh. And I think to use this technique to elicit the requirements on the sensor systems.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And actually, it just reminded me of a piece of work that my colleague Kyle Julian has currently been working on, where he basically so he's using a neural network vision-based controller to control the taxiing of an aircraft down a runway. So the aircraft has a camera on the wing, and it's looking down the runway, and it's taking images. And then it's using those images to basically predict kind of how off track it is. And then it has a simple proportional controller to get it on track. And so he was interested in understanding what kind of noise in the camera could lead to the aircraft swerving off of the runway. And so he used a technique where, so he used adaptive stress testing, but the disturbances he used were changes to the actual pixel values of the camera image. And what he was able to show is that under a certain amount of noise to the camera, he was unable to find any failures of the system. But as soon as the noise reached a certain percentage threshold, then he was immediately able to find these scenarios where the aircraft would eventually veer off of the track. So that could immediately be translated into a specification on how good your camera needs to be. So it has to have a noise threshold less than whatever he found it to be. So I think that's a really practical and interesting idea.
When talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning, What kind of hardware do you need to run those simulations? I think some people think of large computer farms in somewhere, I don't know where, in California, like Google have it and Amazon have it. But do you really need those strong computers, or what do you need for to run those simulations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it depends a lot on the fidelity of the simulator that you're running. So the actual reinforcement learning algorithm doesn't take that much computational power, but it does have to run probably thousands of scenarios, if not tens of thousands or more. And so the simulators that we use are really simple driving simulators that don't have vision-based perception systems, don't have that complicated of a driving policy. And so I run all the simulations that you've seen in my papers on just a simple MacBook laptop. And so they'll run in you know, an hour or a couple hours. But if you wanted to scale this up to a full-size simulator, there's a couple challenges you have to overcome. The first one is that many of these full-scale simulators that have, you know, nice graphics and vision-based perception and stuff often run in real time. So they'll make sure they're running at 60 frames per second or something like that, and making updates in real time. And that can be a challenge, because if you actually have to run thousands or tens of thousands of scenarios, and each scenario actually takes in real time, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds, that's going to be a lot of computational effort for just a relatively simple scenario. So the first key thing is making sure your simulator can run faster than real time. So, you know, this means maybe disengaging it from, you know, the client side viewer that shows everything in real time. And then another approach that people are thinking about taking is to have a sort of a stack of simulators that go from lowest fidelity, kind of like the simulators that we are using, up to the highest level of fidelity. And so then you run the most computationally expensive, you run your reinforcement learning algorithm at the lowest fidelity, find a bunch of failure possibilities, and then run those failures on the higher level, higher fidelity simulators to see if they're still failures in the actual system. And so this can reduce the amount of simulations you have to run with those more expensive simulators.
Fidelity, what do you mean in this regard?
Oh yeah, so fidelity would just be the amount of detail that you include in the simulator. So whether or not you're actually running things in 3D with full-scale graphics and a camera-based perception system versus, say, like a 2D simulator, which is what we use, that has ground truth knowledge about the position of the agents and stuff like that. So, like, are you familiar with the driving simulator Carla?
No.
Okay, so Carla is I believe it's open source, or at least it's publicly available. And it's based on, I think, the Unreal graphics engine. So it has these photorealistic scenes that you can create, like in cityscapes with a bunch of different agents on the road. And it has really high level vehicle dynamics with suspension and all of this stuff. So I would call that a high fidelity simulator.
That means you need a GPU and not that much CPU power.
Yes, exactly. So if you're dealing with a lot of graphics, then having at least one good GPU would probably be necessary.
Yeah, okay. But GPU systems, embedded systems, are available at, I think, $100, 100 euros at that scale.
Yeah, exactly. So,
which would mean to me that it is not that expensive to make this kind of simulations.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, every autonomous vehicle company or, you know, group that I've talked to is already running many, many, many simulations, but they're just doing it on scenarios that they've developed themselves. So there's just scenarios they've seen in the past or from driving experience that they know are going to be challenging for the vehicle. And so they'll keep this sort of log of scenarios, and then every time they make an update to the system or something like that, they will run it on all of these different scenarios to make sure it still is behaving properly. And so my suggestion is to say, well, you know, you're already doing it on a bunch of scenarios you've designed. Why not also do it on a bunch of scenarios that are generated by a machine learning agent that can find failures that might have been missed by the people who were designing the test cases before.
I'm just asking because I think some smaller companies think they can't handle this kind of new technology, but I think that the first steps in this field, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and so on, is not that difficult to achieve.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'll just say one other thing for the practitioners, so people who would be wanting to actually implement a method like this. The biggest challenge for it is designing your simulator in a way that you have control over the disturbances that you care about. So in the example we gave earlier, if you care about, say, the pedestrian on a crosswalk, and in that case, we wanted to have control over the pedestrian acceleration, so the whole motion of the pedestrian, as well as the noise that the ego vehicle is seeing when it's trying to perceive the pedestrian. So we built out some models that we could control directly the noise that the ego vehicle sees, as well as the acceleration of the pedestrian. And as soon as you've set up your simulator in that way so that you have these control points, then you can just use reinforcement learning algorithms that come out of the box. So there's a bunch of them freely available online that you can just directly use with really very little modification.
We talked now about stress testing, artificial intelligence, machine learning. You're working at Stanford University. What is the stage this technique achieved? Let's say from a scale from the first idea to and the other end of the range is applied in industrial practice. In which stage is this technology, do you think?
Yeah, so it is definitely beyond just the idea stage. It's been applied in actually the avionics industry before. So my advisor, Professor Kokendurfer, helped develop the next generation of aircraft collision avoidance systems, which are these systems that basically make sure that two aircraft don't collide when they get near each other. And the logic on board these systems is actually the result of machine learning technique. So it's very forward thinking. And so before the FAA, which is the Federal Aviation Administration in the United States, before they were allowed to actually validate the use of these systems, this new collision avoidance system, they did a whole slew of tests on it. But one of those tests that was done was using this adaptive stress testing technique to try to understand what types of failures might actually occur with this system. So that was that's kind of where the idea actually came from, and it has been used to discover weaknesses in aircraft collision avoidance systems. So I think that's definitely a mark to show that it is used in practice. And then the other example I'll give is that I have a colleague right now who's working at a self-driving car company, and they are working with him on implementing that idea that I mentioned before, which is running a bunch of scenarios on a low fidelity simulator, and then taking the scenarios that look like they could lead to failure and running them on their higher level fidelity simulator. So that's in progress right now. So it's being implemented in industry as well.
Yeah, but I think I want to make clear the machine learning algorithm was used to test the system. The new collision avoidance system does not use machine learning live, right?
So it actually uses a technique called dynamic programming, which is, you could classify it as a machine learning technique. It is a much less of a black box technique than using a neural network, for example, mm-hmm. Which would not be acceptable for an aircraft collision avoidance system. But one of the amazing contributions that I think Professor Kokendurfer gave was the ability to take the old collision avoidance system, which was just a big set of rules that someone had come up with, and convert it to a decision-making problem, and then used one of these decision-making algorithms, like I said, called dynamic programming, to construct the set of rules that the aircraft collision avoidance system uses. So it is a version of machine learning, I would say.
Can you describe dynamic programming a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing you need in dynamic programming is a model of your environment. So in the aircraft collision avoidance case, you have, you know, two aircraft, and they have some dynamics. So how much can they move over a given period of time? As well as they have a model for the pilot response. So what the pilot will do when they're given some sort of advisory. And then there's the advisories themselves, which are sort of the actions that the collision avoidance system can take. So if two aircraft are, you know, imminently going to collide, it will tell one of these aircraft to pull up, so ascend, and then the other aircraft will descend. So once you have a model of the system, you have to, as well as probabilities associated with each of these different actions, then you need to understand in all possible trajectories of interactions between these aircraft, what advisory should you give the aircraft in order to minimize the possibility of a mid-air collision. And so this seems like a really intractable problem, where, you know, you have to enumerate all of these possible interactions between the aircraft. But it turns out that with this technique called dynamic programming, you can tractably solve that problem. So you can basically determine what is the optimal advisory to give for every given scenario or state of the two aircraft. And this can be done offline entirely. So you do this on a computer beforehand, and it, you know, takes some amount of time to run, and it creates a lookup table of basically what aircraft or what advisory should be given in each state. And then that table, once it's been supremely vetted and validated by the FAA, would go onto an aircraft. And then during flight, the aircraft just simply has to look up the current state and determine which advisory to give. So that's kind of a high-level summary.
Okay, that means that it reduces complexity while developing the collision avoidance system.
Yeah, because it just means you have to set up the problem appropriately, and then you can just solve it for the optimal actions.
Sounds interesting. I have to admit, yeah. I heard it for the first time.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
We now reach the end of this podcast. Anthony, do you have any reading recommendations for the listeners who want to know more about machine learning and artificial intelligence in case of autonomous driving and autonomous systems?
Yeah, so for those listeners who are interested in hearing more about algorithms for safety validation of autonomous systems, our group has put together a survey paper of all of the different approaches that we have found for safety validation of black box autonomous systems. So this can be autonomous driving or aircraft collision avoidance or whatever the system is. And so the adaptive stress testing approach that I talked about is just one of many possible approaches that are all based on different principles and techniques. I'll leave the link with Florian, and he can put it in the podcast description so that you can check that out.
Yeah, I will link it on my website and on the podcast description. Yeah, but everyone who is a glutton for punishment can read it. It has 55 pages, I see already.
That is correct. And you can get it, you know, just read maybe the first paragraph of each section, and it gives a good overview of the different techniques in that section. So you can pick and choose. Yeah.
I had a look on the paper. It is a very good resource for everyone who is interested in this field. Good. Then thank you, Anthony, for being my guest today. Thank you for being my first guest in the first English episode.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening and see you next time at Safety Corner.
The views and opinions of the guests in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the host or any possible sponsors. The discussed contents, case studies, and analyses are only to be seen as examples and cannot replace detailed research and therefore do not represent the only possible solution. The discussed examples in no way replace application-related analyses as they are based on only a few assumptions. The podcast or parts of it may not be saved or further processed without express permission.